This is Maurice Philogene, and welcome to the Try Life On podcast. Well, you may not believe it, but I've been an actor. I've tried out for the NFL, been a street cop, federal agent. I worked my way up the military chain of command to the rank of lieutenant colonel. I was also an executive at a global consulting firm, hundreds of millions of dollars worth of real estate in the United States. I've started developing on a Mediterranean island, and to boot, I've traveled to 100 countries over 300 times, and generally all this stuff at the same time. No, I'm not trying to be everywhere. I'm not trying to do everything. What I was trying to do, and I'm still trying to do, is to try life on, to plug into planet and earth as intended, and to fill my life book with experiences and relationships, and not just accept the status quo. So what we're going to do on this podcast is introduce you to the mindset, the skill set, the soul set, the approach that is Try Life On, and expose you to the people who've been doing it just like me, their tools, their tips, their tactics to trying life on, because we all can try life on in our own way. So sit back, relax, let's go for a ride. Let's go try life on. What's happening, family? Welcome back to another edition of the Try Life On podcast. Well, I always find it very enlightening when I get to meet someone who's truly been on their version of a Try Life On journey, their version of an enlightenment journey, where they go from not living their authentic self to being someone who is truly plugged into planet and earth as intended. And that is the case for my man, Dave Carnes. He lives and works differently, that's for sure. Dave and his beautiful wife, Amanda, and their family live in Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island, Canada. The island is on the east coast of Canada. It actually is a full province, but it's an island in and of itself, 300 miles end to end. But how did he get there? That's the beautiful thing. By the way, I'm a big fan of Prince Edward Islands because I love oysters. And anytime I'm in the United States and a place is serving oysters, I'm always asking for PEI oysters. That's a side note. But what we got to talk about today was his awakening journey. At least I referenced it as an awakening journey that I found truly enlightening. Essentially, over time, Dave woke up. He explains that he went from big city life in Toronto. He was kind of chasing status and money as a professional poker player, making loads of money, but even in that particular instance, realizing that he was on this bit of treadmill where he wasn't getting anywhere, constantly chasing after the next thing, but not plugging into life the way that he truly wanted. That eventually shut down and he moved into the commercial real estate space. This is not a real estate podcast for sure, but he moved into the commercial real estate space, specifically working in the flex office sector. So think like WeWork. And he worked remotely, which I think is key to a lot of people's lifestyle. He worked remotely. And sometime around 2019, he and his wife, Amanda, went to Prince Edward Island just on a vacation, just to spend some quality time together. And they felt something. And I think that's the key. We are so inundated with digital, with I have to be somewhere, with I have to make this status, with I have to get this money, I have to buy the next thing, I have to impress my friends. We are so inundated. Dave and I were talking about the fact that our nervous system doesn't get the chance anymore to slow down and experience things like, I hear birds, I can hear the wind, there is no light pollution, there is no noise pollution. Whatever happened to them on that trip, they felt something, especially Amanda and especially Dave. That started their shift, and it led to their family, and I love this phrase by Amanda, his wife, their family landing in their life. Love that. They made a conscious decision to shift how they were going to live life. They chose to create something special for them, a dynamic for them. Dave leveraging, of course, his virtual job to be able to live on the island. And as he said to me, Charlottetown, which is the capital, has 90,000 people, but the island itself has 165,000. So everyone is concentrated in Charlottetown. And when you drive out of Charlottetown, and I cannot wait to go there, I secured an invite. When you drive out of Charlottetown, it gets rural very fast. So they have the benefit of, it's not big city, but they have a benefit of a tight-knit community in town. And then you can go out and streams, rivers, trees, nature, you're by yourself. That's got to be a beautiful feeling. And then the one other thing I want to reference is he talked about relationships, the fact that they can go into town, they know people quite a bit, you're talking to the same coffee shop owner, building meaningful relationships, where a lot of times in life right now, all of our relationships are so cursory because we're all running constantly. in my coaching for Try Life On, I talk quite a bit about freedom to build meaningful relationships with people, and the fact that relationships are a stronger currency than money. And Dave proves that out. So he essentially went from being a high roller to being a virtual guy, then to living a new lifestyle, one that he landed in with his wife, Amanda, and their family. And I thought it was a great example of somebody who's been on a journey of enlightenment and is trying life on their way. And all of us who are listening to these podcasts are looking for people of inspiration and stories of inspiration so we can shift how it is that we present ourselves and show up in the world. The one thing that I got out of this was, for me, even in my very awake self with respect to lifestyle design, but to go land in my life, to go be in the place I want to be with the people I want to be with, plugging into those relationships, being in nature, being around things that make sense for me. I got no problem being in a big city, but I also do want to be around the things that the planet has to offer and have the time to actually enjoy them, which is where my life is headed now. You've heard me talk about the Mediterranean quite a bit, and that is one of the reasons why I love it so much, because I'm always in the Mediterranean Sea. I think this is a fascinating conversation with Dave Carnes. I wanted to give you a lead up to it because it's a long conversation. And give the brother some due, because he took us through the whole poker journey, which is a little bit long at the beginning, but it's necessary. It's necessary to understand the detail of what he was going through to have the perspective of why he landed where he landed. I love this conversation. I hope you love it too. If you do enjoy the conversation and you like what I'm giving you on the podcast, please consider giving me a 5-star rating. If you want to chat about it, send me a note to maurice@trylifeon.com. But for now, just enjoy this interview with David Carnes, my man from Prince Edward Island. I cannot wait to see you in June, brother. Thank you for spending time with me on the show.
I'll try to take you back to the beginning. I was a competitive ski racer growing up, like downhill ski racer.
Yeah.
And it was something, I was kind of forced into it actually by my dad, who chose that lifestyle. Mm-hmm. He was actually a competitive water skier growing mm-hmm. up, and he was one of the best in North America. For whatever reason, I think that he liked that like weekend sport thing that he did with his family. For him, it was like going up to the lakes north of Toronto, where we grew up. I'm from Toronto, Canada originally.
Yeah.
And I think it was a bit of a lifestyle sport thing that he wanted to replicate, but he chose snow skiing instead. Yeah. And the reason I bring that up is that there's a lot about that lifestyle I really didn't like. It was like a private club kind of mentality.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And I wasn't really a fan of that. And by the way, I got a switch speaker here. Yeah. So I wasn't really a fan of that. But there ended up being a lot that I gained from the sport mm-hmm. of downhill skiing that really mm-hmm. shaped the future of my life. And I didn't know that at the time. One of the things mm-hmm. I actually really loved about it was that it was black and white. Like the time is the time, you know, like
yeah.
There's no ambiguity there. Like you either come first, second, third, or 50th. And, you know, that'd be like any, you know, whatever, sprinting, anything that's just kind of black and white. Without going into all the detail, I think that my childhood life was just tumultuous. And there was something about that, like, purity of the black and white nature of the sport that gave me this sense of safety that I think mm-hmm. I was lacking elsewhere. But anyway, I did that until I was about 17, 18. And it was just, it's a super expensive sport. And you really have to be good at it to say that you want to keep continuing. One weird thing about it is when you get to 15 years old, it's open competition. So you compete against people like 30, which is crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's so crazy. Like to go down the hill against a 30-year-old man as a 15-year-old. Yeah. It's just wild.
But you did this right away? Like this was just like the family business, in other words?
When you say right away, sorry, what do you... You mean like right out of the... Like when I was young, you mean? Or
yeah, right when you were young. He got you into sport right away?
It was probably around like, I don't know, I think we started taking it seriously around like 10. He, you know, he like bought a small ski chalet or something, and like we wanted it to be like our weekend lifestyle, right? Mm-hmm. So I think it was around 10 that I got into it more seriously. We skied when I was young, but like taking it seriously as a sport was around 10, 11 years old. But anyway, so I quit and I ended up having this big void because what I loved also about that sport was you compete like against your peers. Like you train together away from race day, but then even your teammates are your competition on race day, right? Including like the people you train with plus everybody else becomes your competition. But I love that ability to train with my peers and then go at it against them. There's just sort of like a fun competitive rivalry about that that I quite liked.
I get it.
But yeah, so I kind of lost that, and there's a pretty big void. And this just happened to coincide with the boom in online poker. So in 2003, this guy named Chris Moneymaker from Nashville, Tennessee, an accountant from Nashville, Tennessee, named Chris Moneymaker, can't fucking make this shit up. He wins, he takes a $30 online satellite tournament on pokerstars.com and parlays that $30 into a prize package to get a hotel, a flight, and a seat in the main event at the World Series of Poker for $10,000, which was the buy-in for the main. And he goes down there, and the guy fucking wins the whole thing. He takes it down for $2.5 million.
Okay.
And of course, like Poker Stars, this was just as like, you know, the modern day internet was taking off, right? Like, you know, we got high speed internet in the late 90s, but like by around 2003, you know, it was really taking off. And so Poker Stars just jumped all over this guy. And they made him their spokesperson.
What do you mean jumped all over him? Like they didn't trust him kind of thing? Or,
no. I mean, I'm not clarifying it. They wanted to market him. They were like,
incredible,
right? Yeah. This guy takes $30 and turns it into $2.5 million and beats out, you know, the best players in poker, right? So anyway, to give it some context, the next year in the main event was 2,500 players, went from 800 players to 2,500 players, and then from 2,500 players to almost 6,000 players. Like, this is how big the boom was. And so I got into the game around that time. And I kind of filled the void that I was missing from skiing, some of those competitive endeavors of like, you know, you compete against your peers, but you train together, and like the action, you know, skiing is a pretty risky sport. Like, you can fuck yourself up skiing and you can lose a lot of money playing poker. There was something about that appealed to me. But that was in high school. And then I went to university at McGill in Montreal in 2005. And this was sort of the time I could just like play poker. Like, I knew when I was going there, the thing I was going to do was play cards online. And so to skip over all of it, in university, I spent most of my time doing that. And in my fourth year, which was now 2009, a buddy of mine and I decided to play in the same online poker tournament side by side one night. And we just said, we'll split earnings 50-50. Like, we'll make decisions together, and whoever wins whatever money, we'll just chop it up, right? And I ended up winning this tournament for that had around 7,000 or 8,000 people in it. I forget how many now, but I won it for $275K Canadian at the time.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah. It is, especially.
Did you make were you trying to make a career out of it, or was just you were just playing games here, games there kind of thing?
I mean, I think I want, like, you know, in my mind's eye, I wanted to be a pro poker player. Whether I thought I'd ever get there was a different story, like altogether. But what was weird about that moment for me was that because it was won on my account, like, I'm the one who won it, right? So I had the notoriety. I split the money with my friend. Like, I sent him, I'll never forget it. I sent him like a bank transfer for whatever it was, right? Like a huge amount of money. And I call him, I say, hey, did you get it? And he's like, yeah, I've been looking at my screen for the last 20 minutes, just chain smoking cigarettes.
Well, I would too, if I get that kind of windfall of money.
Yeah. It was pretty funny. So yeah, then I ended up
gear poker player college. This was in college.
Yes, yeah, in college.
Okay, I got you.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah, I graduated. Luckily for me, it was close to graduation time, so I didn't have to, like, a lot of my friends that played cards, they dropped out of school because they were like making money earlier. They had success earlier. I'm kind of lucky that I didn't, because I was able to graduate. But in 2009, I had this clarity in my life that I've actually yet to have since, which is that all I wanted to do was play poker. Like, I just wanted to eat, breathe, sleep, poker. That was it. I went down to Vegas to play the main event and a few other big tournaments, and I got a rude awakening. I realized how quickly you could go broke, like playing these live events, right? Like, because online, the buy-ins are like, you know, anywhere from like $20 to $200 was sort of like what I was playing. And you can also play a much higher amount of volume online. You can get two screens going on your, you know, like you can play 16 games at once and really like kind of like you can fast track the fluctuations that the luck has, like where you can basically get to your actualized ROI sooner playing online. Mm-hmm. Whereas in person, it's like an inverse correlation.
You can probably see all the data. My assumption is those online platforms show you a relative amount of data, so you know exactly what you're doing.
You do actually. There are software tools that you can use to basically profile players and build personas around them. But anyway, I want to give you this backstory because it just frames so much of like who I am today. Didn't know that at the time. Like you never do, right? Like you put the pieces together.
Yeah, you were just rolling with it at the time.
Yeah. I go down to Vegas. I lose way more money than felt comfortable. I think I lost like 25 or 30K out of my 250K bankroll or whatever I had. And I was like, holy shit. Like, this is going to go by. This is like water. This is going
to go. Yeah.
You know? So yeah. I basically had the foresight at the time to go like, okay, I got to pause on this because I could go nuts. I said, I'm going to go traveling with a buddy of mine. And if I really want to play this game, I'll come up with a sustainable way to do it.
Right.
That was sort of what I told myself at the time. So I just dropped it for like 90 days. We went to like Southeast Asia, Australia, parts of Europe. And by the end, though, I was really getting the itch. And this was like back in the internet cafe days, which I miss. I miss the internet cafes.
Yeah. But you were getting the itch to go back to live and prove yourself or to go back to the online version of it?
Well, both, really. I wanted to... It's funny. I thought at the time I wanted to go big. I didn't want a lifestyle business. I wanted to become like one of the most known poker players. I wanted to win a seven-figure score. I wanted all like the notoriety, right? Yeah. So I said to myself, if that's what I want to do, I need an investor. I can't do this with my 250K bankroll. I'll go broke.
Is that what happens? Players get investors to back them?
They do, yeah, they do.
Oh, I had no idea.
It's a whole like a subculture economy, man, where like there are no rules other than the ones that are actually made up by the ecosystem, and people just like live within them, and you'll get blackballed if you do the wrong thing. But anyway, I was able to get an investor through a friend that I like. One of my neighbors in college knew a guy who played poker semi-seriously. They gave me his name. I sent him a message on Facebook from, where was I? I was in the Whitsundays in Australia in an internet cafe. And I was just like, sent this guy a message being like, hey, I'm thinking about taking poker seriously and I want a backer. Like, do you know anybody? And he connects me with this guy in Vancouver who I was like 21 at the time. This guy was 23. He'd made probably $8 million playing poker online.
Holy crow.
And he was backing a bunch of players already. They call them horses. So he had a stable of horses.
He had a stable of horses he would send out to make money. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And he probably was he had to kind of spread the risk around and see who would be able to bring back some kind of return. It's gotta be the same way, right? Like same thing investing in real estate or stocks or something.
It's riskier though. It's definitely riskier. Like it's not stable investing. It's more like VC investing. I don't know. Like what you equate it to. Yeah. Something maybe in the middle between VC investing and the shit that you do. So anyway, I went out to Vancouver and he offered to put me into a tournament free of charge for a 70-30 split, 70 for him, 30 for me, with no downside risk for me. Like I didn't have to pay him back if I lost. But I said to myself, I don't need his money. And I kind of want to show him that I'm serious, you know, because I'm asking him to be my backer, right? So I'll never forget this. I walk up to the casino cage at the River Rock Hotel and Casino in Vancouver. And I noticed the guy's face because I'd seen him from Facebook. And I'm like, it's one of those moments where you're like kind of nervous. And I'm like, do I just go up and say hi to this guy? Yeah, I know I'm buying in myself, right? Like, I don't need his money right now. Yeah. But I'm like, I got to go up to him. So I go up to him and he's standing with people that I didn't know he was standing with his horses. He was standing with his horses. Right? I didn't know that at the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, I'm Dave. And he goes, oh, hey, Dave, am I buying you into the tournament? Like, he was so like in his own like cloud world of money that like he forgot that I told him that I didn't want his money. And he's holding like 15K in hundreds, right? And he starts like counting out hundreds for me. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm good. Like, I'm going to buy him myself. Like, it's all good, right? And so anyway, we end up playing on that day. There's like 800 people in the tournament. We both make it through day one. So there's like 450 people left. On day two, with 450 people left, nine players at every table, we actually draw the same table, which is kind of random.
You and like, him.
Yeah,
you,
me and him.
You and the, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yeah, which it's not a, like, you know, not a likely outcome that you'd be end up at the same table with 450 people, random seat drawing. So we play for like 6 hours, kind of battling it out. And we both make it through the second day. And then on the third day, he busts out. I end up making it through to the fourth day. All of a sudden, from like 800 people, there's 27 people left in this tournament. I'm still in it. I'm in like 10th out of 27 people going into day four. Anyway, I ended up busting in 10th, which is shit. But I made like 25K or something. First was like 350. So it was really painful.
You're saying that making 25K was shit?
It was really shit. Poker is the only sport where making money can feel like you just got fucking punched in the face.
It's got to be dangerous then, because then you're like, well, 25K, nothing. Let me go get this 250 and you keep going.
Correct. Correct. It's a dangerous,
I can see the issue.
Yeah. So anyway, I go back to Toronto from Vancouver, pissed off with my 25K. And I'm like, hey man, you know, we never got a chance to talk about our deal. And he's like, oh no, I'm going to send you an offer tonight. And I was like, holy shit, are you kidding me? So he just gave me a deal. He put me into any tournament I wanted to play in the world, up to a $10,000 buy-in, online or in person. I could play anything I wanted. The deal was 50-50 on profits, and any losses that were accrued had to be paid back first. It's called makeup. It's a great deal for
responsible for losses. You are responsible for losses.
It's a great deal for the horse. Like, way, it's crazy. It shouldn't even be legal. Like, the downside risk for the horse is like, you can't just quit your backer. You can't just like run up a tab and quit your backer, right? This is where the unwritten rules come in. People try to do that stuff and they just get a bad name in the industry and no one will invest in them again.
But wait, so the thing that I'm missing, I'm following all this. The thing that I'm missing is the makeup. If a horse lost money, did he have to repay that money?
No, it comes out of future earnings. So let's just say I lose 10K in a
earnings,
tournament.
Future earnings. Yeah. I got you.
Yeah.
It would make
it comes out of future earnings. But it's okay. Just like it's like monopoly for the horse, and that's kind of the problem actually, is that once you get into like 100K makeup, which I was in 100K makeup at one point, then I got all the way out, then back in 100, and it fucks with your head, you know, like and like, you know, it's so funny thinking of your world and like creating a lifestyle business. When I look back, and I actually just made a post and I credited you, you know, that video you put out earlier today of that kid who was like, yeah, I just don't want to work that hard.
I don't
want to
work anymore. It's true.
So I credited you actually in a post that I literally just put up before our talk right now. But I actually, it caused me to reflect, because back when I played poker, I should have just gone the lifestyle route. Like, I could have made money playing online by myself, but instead I shot for the big time, got a backer, created a whole bunch of stress for myself, chased my tail, you know, like
Dave, don't feel bad, because I think people get to that realization at some point. I have 10 business partners right now, 10 across the large scale multifamily, some other stuff, mobile home communities, a development partner, and some people in media. And several of them are still on that bandwagon where they want to go after the big wig and things of that nature. And I'm saying, no, we have enough. Like we've created the lifestyle. Why would we take the risk and trade it in? If you double your net worth three times, you're not going to be three times as happy. That's my statement on it. But I think and everybody has different goals. That's fine. But it does take you a little bit of time to realize it. So I wouldn't sweat that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Thanks, man. I appreciate that. I'm working through that. But let's try to get you up to present day as quickly as I can.
Yeah. Fair enough.
I play the game for another 3 years pretty seriously. And it's starting to wear on me mentally and physically. Physically, because like sitting in front of a screen playing online poker for 16 hours a day, 6 days out of seven is not a healthy lifestyle. So that part of it was weighing on me. And then just like mentally, you know, you play like, I think I played 225 plus 10K buy-ins and I never cashed in one. So just in 10K buy-ins alone, I lost like 250K. And the frustrating part was I actually was profitable playing online. I made money playing online, but I always had to pay back live losses with my online earnings. So that's what I mean about like chasing my own tail and the whole lifestyle thing. Like if I had just played online on my own bankroll, I would have made money.
Yeah.
Like a lot of money actually, which is the fucked up part. I almost got a lucky break. It was like an inflection point, not too dissimilar to this COVID experience, where the DOJ in the US indicted the two largest online poker websites for tax evasion, money laundering, wire fraud, a whole bunch of charges, and consequently made it illegal for anyone in the United States to play poker online. That legislation's changed a lot now, and it's kind of a state by state led thing now, and poker is legal, but the games have never gone back to as global as they were, and they're just not as big anymore because of that state by state legislation. But I just took it as my little like nod from the universe. I'm like, okay, I'm not happy. The games are worse. They're harder. They're smaller. I'm going to get out. Mm-hmm. And I had some friends and family that were in commercial real estate at the time. And they sort of said, look, like you kind of are lost. Like try this out. You're good with people, you're good at analytical skills, and you're used to not making a salary. Like that's what brokers are, you know, that's the life of a broker. So I kind of just took a leap of faith on it, not really knowing what else to do. And I joined CBRE and became an office leasing agent. And I've been doing that now for 11 years, just over 11 years. And it's been a really good career, made a lot of money along the way. But I think COVID was this moment that got me to realize that I closed the door and sort of like locked this digital native in. This guy who knew how to build relationships and collaborate with people online and make money online. You know, the guy, that was what I was doing playing poker. I was playing live, but it was predominantly online, right? That I was playing. So that just put me in this strange spot because I had been in the office, selling the office for like whatever, I guess it was 8.5 or 9 years at the time. And then I started to apply all this thinking that I had no reason to use, which was like, you know, a remote first way of interacting and connecting with other people and blah, blah, blah. And I first started out just being like, okay, it's going to be the definition of insanity for me to try to get clients to lease office space in the middle of a health and safety crisis. Like brokers are already snaky in a lot of ways. Like I'm going to be so I said, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to try to build a brand online. I'm going to try to publicly journal my thoughts. I'm going to see if I can just explore where I think this whole thing is going. And I did that for a while. And incrementally, as I did more of that, it moved further and further away from the commercial real estate market and the kind of mismatch of supply and demand. And it moved more into really more how we work is broken. Like the ways in which we work are more the issue than where we do it.
But specifically to the real estate industry, the commercial leasing stuff you're doing, or are you talking in general?
Just more in general. What I realized is that I'd be better served to speak about how work needs to change than focus on talking about where it should happen.
Okay.
If that makes sense. Despite the fact that this is how I make money, I kind of felt that it was more relevant. And it's been good and bumpy building a brand in that way, because I've certainly gone against the grain of the traditional real estate mantras.
Yeah.
But so, I've managed to be able to exist inside of the largest real estate company in the world.
But are you talking about building a brand for yourself with that mantra inside of the company that you're working for, or are you talking about outside of it?
Well, I mean, I work for CBRE still as a broker.
Oh, you're still at CBRE. Okay.
Yeah, I am. I focus more now on the flexible office sector. I spend more time, you know, like the brand name that everybody would know would be WeWork, but the sector is a lot more vast than that. And I kind of believe more in that sector because I think that, you know, people deserve more choice. There's a clear need for on-demand to become a bigger proportion of the real estate, the office real estate sector. And companies just have to be more agile in this world that we're in for both the good and the bad about the geopolitical climate that we exist in now and where we're moving to next. So I spend more time with that sector. But yeah, on the personal side, Toronto was one of the most locked down cities in the world for COVID.
Okay.
And it just like put so much strain on my family and I. My daughter also has a pretty rare health condition, which caused us to have to keep her out of school a lot for some doctor's appointments that she needed follow up. Like she's actually stable and everything's fine. It's just that we couldn't risk not being able to send her for scheduled appointments. So she had to, and the long and the short of that is it just got us to really reevaluate, like where do we want to be? What kind of life do we want to have? And so we kind of, at one point I was thinking of a role in San Francisco at my company currently. It didn't pan out. And then my wife looked at me and she's like, look, like PEI is our favorite place. Like, why wouldn't we put our really life first?
I got you. Yeah.
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 And so we moved out here.
She had that reflect. Why PEI? Why Prince Edward Islands of all places?
Well, my wife and I both have East Coast lineage in our blood. Okay. Most people, when they think of East Coast, they think of New York or Toronto. But right. If you're a Canadian, the East Coast is the Maritime provinces.
Right. Okay.
So we both kind of had that love of the East Coast. We had spent a bunch of time out here ourselves, like, you know, before we had our daughter.
Oh, so you had been out here before. Yeah, okay.
So actually, we did come out here with our daughter when she was 15 months old. And we just fell in love with PEI together as a family, and it just spoke to us. There's no real reason other than that. At first, though, we were trying to like acquire land or a home to try to be here as many months out of the year as we could while still living in Toronto and living that like keep up with the Joneses life that we were down that path of doing.
Were you aware of? So now you did bring it full circle, because when I talk to other people who are on their own relative lifestyle journeys, they go from everything that, you know, formal school taught us to compete with each other or do the baller thing or whatever, let's say your high stakes poker, if you will, to starting to think a little bit more intrinsically about how they want to work. So we'll call that your CBRE, WeWork, flex office space point, to this very intentional, we want to live a different style of life. And I'll just call that your PEI phase. Were you aware that you kind of had made that progression and landed, if you will? And I don't know if you may move on to something else in the future, but were you aware of it, or it just kind of happened naturally per se?
Well, it's so funny you use the word landed, because it's been an interesting ride individuating my wife and I, you know, moving away from where we came from, leaving every person and every experience we ever had behind, because we don't have family out here. And my wife actually said to me this morning, she goes, you know, what I want for the next phase of our journey out here, because we love being out here, it's changed us so much for the better. She goes, I want to land in my life. I actually want to be landed in my life.
What does that mean for her? I love that phrase, by the way, but what does that mean for her? Now we're talking. What does that mean?
For her, it means like, I want to wake up in the morning and really appreciate the first sip of my coffee.
Yes.
I want my daughter to come downstairs and not feel any existential stress, as much of it as I can avoid, related to finances or stuff that is controllable.
Yeah.
Through shedding ego and getting really aligned on, like, you know, what actually matters. So for us moving out here, we've had to shed a lot of our Toronto bigger city mentality. Me working in a big brokerage house and having some big financial years without really considering what lifestyle we wanted to create with some of those earnings. You know, it's just been a shedding of the ego as we've come out here. And I think we've kind of learned a lot and we're now ready to land in a new phase.
Brother, I love that shedding of the ego. I think in my, you may remember it, but in my post, I talk about that as executing somebody else's version of success. Like we're just, I'm not going to call people drones. You know, my kid, I talk to my kids about this quite a bit. And, you know, they'll play, what's that game? Fortnite. My youngest plays Fortnite all the time. He's old enough to deal with it now. And I say to him, hey, Noah, you know the character that you're controlling with the joystick? He's like, yep, that's you. That's you, quote unquote, in your terms, landing in your life. You are literally moving yourself around. You see all the other characters around there? Those are NPCs, just non-player characters that are just kind of droning in different ways. And I think sometimes when we adopt other people's version of what success is supposed to be, we're just doing that, you know? Yeah. That's why when you said land in your life and your wife talking about that first sip of, or you or your wife talking about that first sip of coffee.
It's her. Morning, I won't take credit for it. It's her.
Yeah, and it's intentional. My for Try Life On, the way that I start people in coaching is we write our perfect day. It's very intentional, has feelings, emotions, smells. Where are you? What are you doing? By the Mediterranean, in PEI, et cetera. And mine talks about my first sip of coffee, which would usually be before 5 a.m., sitting on the pool deck overlooking the Mediterranean. Like I am, you can tell her that she solidified my need to land in my next life.
There you go. She's a very insightful woman. She has quotes. I just start taking them down now. Like I've just started, like whenever she says something, it's either funny or insightful. I start writing them down. And one of my favorite ones, we're standing out here in the kitchen in PEI in our new life out here. And we were going through whatever we were going through, whether I can't even remember whether it's just a day being a parent or like whatever other existential stress is going on. And she looks at me and she goes, you know, there's a lot of cognitive dissonance going on lately between who I think I am and who I actually am. And it's resulting in a lot of unused produce being fruits and vegetables. I just burst out laughing. You know, where like you just let the salad go bad in the fridge, you know, like it's just like, yeah. And you, like you think you're one person, but no, you're another one. And you're the person that has the salad go bad. Cause you know,
good for you guys. You landed in your life. So how long have you been in PEI now? And like, what is life like on a day-to-day basis on an island? Well, I don't know how big the island is that you're on, but what is it like?
Yeah. So we've been here since October, 2021. So just over 2 years. And it's really interesting to reflect because, you know, there's this saying, I forget the name of the author. Wherever you go, there you are.
Wherever you go, there you are. Yeah, I guess so.
In essence, you can't expect that by changing some sort of big thing about your life, whether that be physical, like you move somewhere else, that you'll just be a different person or feel a different way.
No, it takes time. Everything takes time.
Yeah. But at the same time, actually, I think that by individuating and making a big decision like this, whatever that looks like for a person, you force yourself to evaluate who you are, where you are a little bit differently. You know what I mean? So, but just like when we first came here, we just like breathed this massive sigh of relief because our nervous systems needed to just reset. Like we had gone through a terrible COVID experience.
And
then on top of that, there was so much about like the lifestyle that we were living in Toronto, like which was different, you know, less about the location and more about culture of how we were living just didn't work. And so it felt so great to just like settle in. But as time has gone on, you know, like wherever you go, there you are, you start to have to face. I've been facing more of my demons. I've been facing more of the issues in my life that are holding me back. And that process has been definitely up and down, but very, very rewarding and very much worth it. And I don't think I would have been able to do it where I was before.
I talk to people quite a bit about the fact that life is something that we can practice. This notion, your PEI is my Mediterranean, right? Like I want to be in this beautiful place. I want to feel something. Okay, I'm here. Everything must be good. No. It doesn't quite work like, well, there is euphoria for the first month or whatever you want to call it. It feels different, but eventually you're going to settle in and you have to practice how to be there. You have to practice how to be this new person, or your kids in virtual school, or I would be just fine in PEI, but practice how to enjoy getting up at 5 a.m. and taking that coffee and going down to the very cold shoreline or something like that. I think that a lot of time, whether it's lifestyle design or just people's dreams, it doesn't matter. We think that life is the thing that we pick and we get there and we've made it. I don't think we make it. I think we do exactly what you're saying. We have to, I've never heard it the way you said it. So you just taught me something and I'm grateful. But we evolve. We continue to evolve. And then sometimes you kind of forget the last person that you were in DC or Toronto or something. You're like, maybe I don't forget them, but that's not me anymore. It's just that this place has changed. Now I have new challenges that I have to address. So the way you're articulating it, I totally resonate with it. I totally get it. And I think it's good for people to hear you got to your dream location, but it takes work.
Oh yeah. Oh man. It's so much more work than staying where you are. But I want to tell you what it's actually like to live here, because that's actually been really powerful. But before I do that, I just wanted to say one other thing, which is that you said we evolve. I think when we evolve, we shed and we return. So progress can often be a process of returning to someone or something that we already knew. Yeah. And for me, I feel a lot more connected to like me as a kid, like just sort of like my more true self. Oh, and that's been this returning part, right? But it's not just of like evolution is, it can be shed, grow, and return. I don't know. I'm working through my own sort of philosophy on it, but it's kind of how it feels to me. As far as being on an island, it's really amazing, actually. Mm. There's this collective sort of like sense of being held that you feel when you live on an island, mm-hmm. That is hard to replicate. I only have this one experience, so I don't know what it's like to live in a really big populated island, but PEI is actually a large island for physically speaking, geographically speaking.
Is it one island?
It's one island. One island. And it's probably around 300 miles from end to end. So it's pretty big, but population density wise, it's small. So like, you know, a Caribbean island, by example, probably has like 1 million people on it, but from a size perspective, would be much smaller than PEI.
Yeah, yeah.
The fascinating thing about PEI, it's got about 165,000 people that live here. And about 90,000 of them live in the only, it's called city with air quotes, Charlottetown. They live, and so when you get outside of Charlottetown, you're going rural fast. Mm-hmm. And so what's fascinating, we actually bought a cottage that we've turned into an investment property. Mm-hmm. We're actually just about to launch.
Beautiful.
It's an amazing place, Maurice. Like if you're coming to PEI,
I am coming.
You gotta come to this place.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a story behind that too. And I don't want to take too much. I don't know how much time we have or whatever, but there's so much story there too. But the thing that's crazy to me about PEI is you can leave the city and within 1 hour, it's the equivalent of being like 6 or 8 hours north of a major city like Toronto.
It goes that fast.
In terms of how remote it becomes that quickly. And that's what's incredible about it, is being able to kind of come back to this like place that's got all the stuff you need, but within an hour you're like nowhere on earth. Like it's fascinating.
Is PEI like a little known secret kind of thing?
It is a little known secret. It is. It's yeah.
I have a background question for you. Isn't my son's mom's side of the family is actually Canadian? So my son has a Canadian passport, but they're from Saskatchewan, so that's a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
But isn't PEI itself a province?
It is.
So it's okay. There's a PEI province, and then there's the island itself.
They're the same thing. They're one and the same.
Oh, it's just that one island that is the province.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So small. Yeah. Now, and then the more fun fact for you, it's actually the place where the first talks of Canadian Confederation occurred prior to 1867 Confederation of Canada. And they were actually thinking of making PEI Charlottetown the capital. but they elected to not make the capital on an island. And it only in the early 90s did it get connected to mainland Canada through a bridge. And it's the longest bridge in the world above a frozen waterway. Wow. Yeah. And so anyway, the other thing that's fascinating to me about moving out here, and this actually ties into the whole like remote work or like flexible way of working, let's call it like non-linear days rather than where specifically you sit. Cause I actually work from co-working spaces a lot of the time. So it's not that I don't actually use office space. It's more about non-linear days. It's allowed me to linger in the community more. And by lingering in the community, I've made all these friends that I never made in my past life, right? Like my best friend is the guy who runs an independent pet shop. You know, I didn't have those kind of friendships when I was in Toronto.
I'm glad you said that because I try to articulate this point to people. When I do travel, I don't travel much as a tourist at all. My intent is to mix with the community, to figure stuff out. I like to go slower places for that very reason. Where we are, I'm saying we with air quotes and being facetious, but us Toronto and Washington DC people, we're just so fast. Like everything is fast moving. There's no time for stopping. It's I got to get this done. I got to get this done. I think sometimes it's perceived and sometimes it's environmental. You're the one who's standing still. Everybody else is moving. So you feel like you got to run. But those deep relationships, like when I go back to the Mideast next week, I'm going straight to the bars and to the very small coffee shops where I've known people for 4 or 5 years now, because those are the deep relationships. And it just makes your life better. It's not Starbucks where you don't know somebody.
Yeah, you're right. It's so funny you say that about like you moving fast and them moving slow. I have to call people up and be like, hey, can I pay you that bill I owe you? Like they're like, it's like...
Exactly. But David, don't you you really hit you really that really resonated. Don't you feel that from people, that people are just running for the sake of running? They don't even realize that they're running. And yes, I can say that now because I'm out of the traditional work world and I've slowed myself down to an extent. But when I look at it, if I'm at a, I say this facetiously to my kid, when we're at the traffic light at 10 a.m. in the morning or something like that, and I just see people hauling butt everywhere, going all these places, I'm like, where is everybody going so freaking fast when there's life to be lived right here in the moment right now? It takes locations like a PEI to slow you down for you to see something like that.
Yeah, it does. And I know how privileged I am to be able to even consider it. Like my wife and I have actually said to each other, like, we can move to this place as Canadians and we don't need to immigrate. Like, it's just, it's insane how lucky you are to be a Canadian, by example, or an American or whatever, like some of the stuff that you can do. Yeah. Now, moving out here has been very difficult in many respects, but that level of that's actually something that's really been crystallizing for us in the last few months, is just like gratitude for these very, I'm going to use the word basic, I don't know how to like articulate, but it's like, just like being able to like baseline live in a place where your nervous system can be regulated. What an amazing gift that is, no matter what house you have, no matter what you have there, just the fact that you can be there
you can actually sense life. You can see stars. It's actually quiet out. You can hear cricket, or you can hear the sea coming in or something like that. I don't, a lot of people have that gift. Well, no. In certain parts of the world, of course they do, but in Western culture, I don't think we do. So I have a cottage as well on the water in Maryland, and I bought it for the same reason you bought it. You got yours. I suspect the same reason you got yours. It's to get us out of the city and onto what's called the Chesapeake Bay, but in a very quiet place. There are 6 bald eagles that live there. Osprey come in for the summer. Herons come by. Lots of fish. Lots of crabbing and things of that nature. And we left the house analog on purpose. So there's no Wi-Fi. There's Monopoly, Connect 4. We do have a TV and I can connect it to the hotspot if we want to watch a football game, but it's rare that we're interested in doing that. We need it. And I think people are so numb to it that examples like yours will motivate to realize you don't even have to go very far. There are other ways of living out there. And especially your progression from skiing to poker player to commercial real estate.
Yeah.
Poker, right. Yeah. Commercial real estate. And I know you're still doing the commercial real estate though.
Remotely. I am. It's fast tracked a career transition for me that I knew it would. So I'm actually in the middle of all that right now. And I think the next one for me will still be, working with a team. I don't believe the next phase will be solo Dave. And I don't know, maybe I don't even want that at all. I'm not really sure. But I think to get that, the priority for me right now is to find a business within the future work kind of like narrative that I believe in. That's obviously remote first, because I need to work that way. And I think just sort of like truly work on a team, because brokerage is so competitive. It's like kill or be killed. Like you could get stabbed in the back by the guy or girl who sits right beside you. You're like, holy shit. So I'm just like looking forward to just like moving into another phase at some point in the near term that embodies that. But yeah, it's to go back to kind of like try to get full circle on your comments around, a lot of people are moving quickly. It's really, really difficult. I have a lot of empathy and time for how challenging it actually is for a person to be able to choose differently in that regard.
Yeah.
Like it's just really hard. You have to decide you're going to, in my instance, it was like, say goodbye to family, to the city I grew up in for 34 and a half years. Say goodbye to everything I knew and start it over again. It's the most incredible opportunity and the most incredible risk all wrapped up into one.
But that's right? Life. That's what life should be, right? Taking that thing.
Yeah.
I love that, man. And just as we wrap up, I wanted to tell you, so I was looking at my notes just as you were talking, and you were saying what you guys wanted to do, where you wanted to be. And I can tell you now I'm going to adopt that phrase, landing in my life. Like I've clearly done a lot of different things. I have gone right or gone left when a lot of people have gone right, and I've made good choices and stuff. But I recognize that I want to feel my nervous system even more. I'm happy for all the flying that I do and travel hacking and all that type of stuff. But I'm outside of wanting to raise my 10-year-old and give him all the opportunities that I can give him. What I want even more than that, which is newsletter 19 on the website, because I wrote my perfect day so folks can see how I kind of think about this stuff and go after it, is exactly what you and your wife are talking about, which is like intentional, actually living and feeling what's there, slow, meaningful relationships with people. Running's not bad, but once you move into a point of your life where you don't want to run, simply running just for the sake of it, it will wear you down very, very quickly. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, it's funny, like for us, we're a slow bunch in my family. We like to move really slowly through our days.
Yeah.
And we don't get places fast. Yeah. And so I think for us, we'll probably do a lot of slow traveling with our daughter when she's a little bit older, but she's 5 right now. And so our priority is not really to travel much at all. You know, like I may have to travel for work or whatever, but like, in general, we decided in this phase of life, it's like pick a place you just want to be. And for us, that's PEI. And to your point, Maurice, choosing that is actually hard, right? Because you want to, especially if you're from like a big city and stuff, like you just want to move, you want to do whatever. Mm-hmm. But almost forcing ourselves into it, financially being part of that force, not all of it. It's created this like this whole thing I was just telling you about like evolving and returning at the same time. Evolving
and returning. I love that. And tearing away tearing away the layers?
Just like shedding the ego.
Shedding. Yeah,
just shedding the ego. Like there's just so much ego that I have been dumping over the last 2.5 years of my life.
I've started it with when I retired from the military in 19, left Accenture in 21, left the police in 21. Those identities start to fade and more of who you actually are starts to come out, you know? But another way you can do it is going to a place that draws out the best in you. And it sounds like for you and Haley?
Amanda's her name and my daughter's
Amanda, help. Sorry. Okay. For you and Amanda, it has definitely helped. I have a question that I tend to ask at the end of a interview, but most of the people who listen to this podcast, most of the people who listen to this podcast are trying to figure something out. They're trying to shift from traditional work world to virtual world, or they're trying to do exactly what you had the courage to do, which is break away from their familial upbringing and what society is saying and go live in a place like PEI or whatever. Now, after having gone through your journey, and maybe you could have even gone through it faster. It's just, it was what it was. The timing was the timing. But what would you tell someone who is trying to make a shift, whether it be work, life, family, such that they can try life on now?
Well, the first part is the toughest part, which is to make that decision that you're going to go right when people want you to keep going left. Absolutely. Right. Like, and that could be either in a direct sense, that could be like you have family pressure to like be a certain person, you know, get a certain job and be there for Sunday dinner, you know, whatever the expectations are that you have on you. If you want to move left and they want you to stay right, it's very, very difficult to make that decision. Like, I don't know what advice I can give to somebody about that. You have to just get like mad enough about it or whatever that you just want something different. For us, COVID was what forced us to do it, right? Like, it didn't force everybody, but it forced us because we were ready enough to sort of like get the memo, right?
Right.
But that, I can't say too much about that other than like you have to find your own version of that. Like for us, it was COVID that just forced it, right? But for someone else, it might be something different, especially now. But the big thing my wife and I have been talking about actually since moving out here is like we wouldn't have probably bought a house out of the gate. We would have probably decided to try to soft land it a little bit.
Okay.
But the crazy thing about that is, you know, life. Like, I don't know. I'm working harder on believing that something or someone is holding me. You know what I mean? I'm working harder to believe that. My wife said to me this morning, she's like, you look at the universe as if it's like supposed to be doing magic for you. Like, that's not like really how it works. Like, you're either like, you know, working with it or working against it, but it's not some magic wand thing that's going to like, you know, get you your perfect outcome. But I'm trying to be more in sync with the old universe. And I think that as I reflect, because you can always reflect, it's easy to do that. I don't really want it any other way. Like we've made some big blunders moving to a new place. And maybe we could do another conversation. I could get into that. But like, I think that the biggest thing is just like finding your way to be able to take the leap, whatever that is for you. My one tangible piece of advice is just like the softer landing is probably overall going to be a better decision than trying to like go head first in.
As long as you get there one way or the other is what I say for it. Yeah. And then the final question is, when can I come up to PEI?
Dude, I would love to have you any day you want to come. Seriously.
I listen, man, I'm one of those people who shows up a lot. Not ironically, I don't know. My tie to PEI has been because I was a street cop in DC. Through Accenture, I did some consulting work at RCMP. Some of the leadership for RCMP were based out of PEI. I learned about it and I was like, that's pretty cool. And then every time I'm down here in the DC area or somewhere in the US, if they're serving oysters, the only one I'll eat is the PEI ones that are PEI because they're phenomenal. They're phenomenal. So maybe I can just come up there and we can share some oysters.
Well, you know, I had a CEO of this company who's a client of mine who came up in April, and I toured him all around the island in a 24-hour jaunt. We started in the morning and walked some beaches, and then we had lunch at a really cool spot, and then we went and had dinner, and he left the next day. So if you want to do something like that, we can. And here's my little girl. Come, we'll get her on the
Hi.
This is Al.
Hi, how are you? Good.
That's Maurice. How you doing? You can say. It's all good. You can say. You're safe here. No? Okay, you don't have to.
I'll lean my head like you and try and be cute, but I'm not cute anymore. Well, I will see you up there when I get there.
Yeah, you're welcome anytime, man. Seriously. And it would be amazing to meet you. So
Well, yeah. I appreciate you. I appreciate your story. Sorry it took us so long to get together, but once I figured out your story, I was like, yeah, man, we have to talk. And now actually, one last thing. I'm glad we talked, because just like anything related to social media, all you see is the outcome, right? I didn't know your full progression and how challenging that must have been to shed ego, as you say, to go from this to that, to move away from family, yet stay connected to family. That's a whole different set of challenges and whirlwinds, and I respect you for that, man. So, but thank you for talking to me today, brother, and I can't wait to see you up.
Thank you as well. And I definitely want to keep staying in touch with you. There's a lot actually that I wanted to be able to ask you about how you've done what you've done.
We'll flip it. We'll flip it and we'll do another one. Or I'll just come up there and have some coffee and oysters with you. For real.
Well, I mean, if you want to come up and we could record something live from here.
Done.
That would be
cool. You have my word. You have my word. Done.
Okay.
Well, actually, we'll get offline and we'll schedule it probably in like March or April.
I have Starlink internet up at the cottage. So we could do it from the cottage.
We'll figure it out. All right, brother. Thanks.
Okay, later.
Bye-bye. Hey, guys. This is Maurice, host of the Try Life On podcast. And thank you for listening to another episode. I hope you are finding it useful in helping you design your own lifestyle that you don't need a vacation from. If that's the case, please consider dropping a review for me, whether in Apple, iTunes, or in Spotify. Drop a review, put some stars on it, give me some feedback on how I can make the podcast better, what information you are looking for. I am doing my best to get information to you on the Try Life On principles, the five freedoms, how to build lifestyle, travel hacking, all of it. And I want to do it for you. So please do a review for me. And until next time, my name is Maurice Philogene, and this is the Try Life On podcast. Peace.